Good evening, Bob. Welcome to the Space Show.
Thank you. Nice to be here, Andrew.
There's been no ocean discovered for the last 500 years, but I believe you'd like to correct that situation.
Yes, indeed, we would like to change that. We think we know exactly where to look. We've got some pretty good evidence that there's now one on Europa. Or rather, it'd probably be better to say we have good evidence that at some time in recent geological past, there has been one on Europa, and we would like to find one there today.
Where is Europa?
Europa is one of the moons of the planet Jupiter. Jupiter has something like 16 or 17 known moons now. I'm not exactly sure of the number. Four of those are large ones, referred to as the Galilean moons. The reason for that is because they were discovered by Galileo about 400 years ago. Europa is one of those four.
And what do we know about Europa at the moment, then?
One of the main things that we have learned is that it is covered with ice. The surface is just about pure ice. It's kind of dirty. We think that some of this dirt and debris probably got deposited by meteoroid impacts. We also think some of it probably came up through from below with water that was pushed through the ice to the surface. But other than that, we know that it's largely covered with ice. It's got a metallic core, either iron or iron sulfide. Above that is a layer of dirt, rocks, and then on top of that, water and ice. Or maybe just ice. That's all part of what we're trying to find out.
Our first mission past there was the Voyager craft. They just flew by, but you've been able to do some more extended studies recently with Galileo.
Yes, that's right. Voyager just zipped in and zipped out and went on to Saturn. We, with the Galileo spacecraft, have now been in orbit there for almost 3 years. And in that 3 years, we have now completed 9 close flybys, close ranging anywhere from about 200 kilometers up to about 4,000 kilometers, and have made some pretty detailed observations. Observations with the camera, with infrared spectrometers, ultraviolet spectrometers, had done gravity studies using the radio signals, the Doppler that came from the spacecraft as we flew by. So we've increased our knowledge of Europa tremendously. Haven't learned everything yet, but we've learned quite a bit more.
And what indication is there then that there's an ocean?
In the ice surface that we see, there are large, long cracks, and there are areas where you can tell from looking at the surface that the ice has ruptured. And when it ruptured, it created ice flows that then floated around, that rotated, and then refroze back into place. We can't think of any other explanation other than water underneath that would allow these flows to float and move into the positions that they're in today. Another thing we've seen is that there's a large impact crater where a meteoroid hit Europa probably some number of millions of years ago. And normally, impact craters leave an excavation, a depression. But this one isn't depressed. It's level and in some places higher than the surrounding surface. So the bottom of that crater must have been pushed up, must have floated back up to the surface. So all of these things give us pretty solid evidence that at least a few million years ago there was water down there.
So obviously we want to go back there, and you at JPL are trying to do that, aren't you?
Yes, that's right, Andrew. We have a mission now that is in the study stage, but a fairly serious study stage, where we're looking to build a spacecraft that'll go back to Jupiter, go into orbit around Europa, and do some quite detailed mapping, and mapping in 3 different areas. It would be a gravity map from the radio signal, it would be a surface map from the camera, and it would be a beneath-the-surface map using radar techniques. So with a combination of those 3 approaches, we would like to get back there and learn a whole lot more about it. We'd be in orbit at 200 kilometers altitude circular going around Europa with this mission, whereas with Galileo, we just zipped on by one time at 200 kilometers, most of the time a fair amount higher than that. So with a stay right at Europa for the entire thing, and with instrumentation geared specifically to learning about Europa, should be pretty exciting. We should learn a lot.
This craft, of course, won't be landing there.
Pardon me?
This craft won't be landing.
That is right. This one won't. This one only will orbit. We have other studies that are not nearly yet to the as serious a stage as the current one is. We would like to land at some point, but that's going to be a number of years downstream, and we will not have completed the final detailed design until the current orbiter mission has been completed and we've got the results back. We need to know better what the surface looks like. We'll need to know how thick the ice is. We'll need to know how much water there is, if in fact there really is water. So we need the results back from this mission before we'll be able to launch another one. If this mission goes on our current schedule, it'll launch in 2003, arrive in 2006, arrive at Jupiter in 2006, get into orbit around Europa in either 2007 or 8. So we're talking about 10 years from now before we'll have the results back from this mission. And that's even perhaps a little optimistic. Funding for these missions isn't always as plentiful as we would like, and it's entirely possible that it won't get funded to launch in 03. So it could delay a year or two or three. So 10 years at least.
You've been through some of the primary scientific objectives. What are some of the secondary ones?
Well, let's see if I can remember them. One is that we would like to understand better what the radiation environment is. If we can characterize that better, what it is at Europa with this mission, then that'll enable us to better design a mission to go back for a more detailed study, for one that would land on the surface and sit there for some amount of time. We'd like to understand better about the surface, how it was formed, what the topography of it is, and we'd like to understand better what the composition of the surface is. We know there to be salts there that look like salt water, brine salts. So in addition to finding out whether there's water down beneath, we'd like to better understand the process by which the surface evolved and what else is there besides ice.
To do the survey, you obviously need some cameras aboard, obviously looking in different spectral ranges. What other instruments will you need?
Other than the cameras, we'll need a radar antenna, and we will need a radio frequency system that will allow us to do a sounding of the ice. And that's about it. Obviously, we could define quite a few more instruments that we'd like to carry, but as you put on more instruments, it means the thing gets heavier and heavier and more costly. And in the limitations that we have now, probably only those instruments, the camera, the radar, well, I should say cameras because they are multispectral, as you said, the radar antenna and equipment, and the radio system to send back the Doppler data. That's probably all we'll have.
Radars take a fair bit of power to operate. How are you going to power the craft?
We're going to use radioactive power, the same as we've used on Galileo and Cassini. It won't take nearly as much because the overall power requirements are quite a bit less. The spacecraft we're designing now needs 150 watts of electrical power, as opposed to Cassini that has about 750. But it's the same technique that we've used for all of the other spacecraft that have gone at least as far out as Jupiter in the solar system.
At the time of the launch of Cassini, there was a move in the courts in the United States to stop it by some people. Were those people representing a wide feeling in the United States, or were they just a small minority? And how serious a threat were they? And are you going to sort of do a public education program before the launch of these new craft?
Well, let's see, Andrew, you got two or three questions there. Let's see if I can remember all of those. With regard to how representative of the American public this group was, I guess I only can give you my own personal opinion. It's difficult to know for sure about that kind of thing, but all indications are that they are not at all representative of the American public. It's hard to tell what their motives really are, because the threat, the risk from this kind of thing just isn't nearly what they would like to have people believe that it is. So I'm not sure what their motives are. That same kind of thing is potentially a threat for a Europa Orbiter mission as well, although in the case of Cassini, we were flying about 32 kilograms of radioactive material, and for the Europa Orbiter mission, we're only flying about 2 kilograms. It's the reason it's so much less is we have about a factor of 5 less power requirement, and we've got about a factor of 3 or 4 improvement in efficiency. So whatever risk there might be associated with this, it'll be considerably less for a Europa Orbiter mission. We are now working on some kind of public education efforts. They're more geared just to explaining the nature of Cassini and how it really is safe and what a exciting scientific mission is going to be. And future missions that require this kind of power should benefit from this as well. Now, the extent to which it's a threat, I think probably not. I think the fact that the courts realized back at the time of the Cassini launch that the right thing to do was to proceed and clear us to launch as they did, as an indication that the courts really understand both the benefits and the risk, or lack of risk, as the case may be.
I don't want to labor the point, but it wasn't we've known for years that Cassini was going to be launched, how it was going to be powered, and yet they chose just the last few days before launch to file their complaint.
That's right. I can only speculate that their motives were, their belief was that that would be the most effective way to stop the launch. If they had started earlier and we had had ample opportunity to explain and describe exactly what was involved, exactly how everything worked, then it would have worked to their disadvantage. So they were counting more on a surprise tactic and giving us less time to respond to it. I can only imagine that that's what the motive was in identifying it, in raising the question that late. You're certainly right. We had known for a number of years we were going to launch Cassini. We had also, some 8 or 9 years earlier, launched Galileo, which used exactly the same sources. So it wasn't like we did any surprises. We did a full-up environmental impact study that was published and distributed out for public review on the schedule as required by U.S. government regulations. So we did everything that we were required to do. It was fully reviewed, and they knew years in advance what we were doing.
Well, thank you for joining us tonight on the Space Show.
My pleasure. Glad to be here, Andrew. Always like to talk about this kind of thing.